Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. So the NRA and the John Birch Society and all these guys, I remember when I was like 12, my dad took me to a John Birch Society. He was a Republican. He was very active with the Republicans. He thought they were nuts. I'm not sure he'd been to one of these meetings before. It was hosted by a neighbor of ours, a guy who lived down the street. They gave me a copy of John Stormer's book, None Dare Call It Treason. I took it home. I read it. I was freaked out. The State Department was infiltrated with communists. Oh, my God. But back then, the right-wingers at least were saying what we're concerned about is that someday the police powers of this country may be used against its own citizens. Now, of course, they thought they were going to be used against them. Which was, you know, at that time, at least where I was, suburban white men, by and large, at that John Birch Society meeting. The NRA been saying the same thing. They've sold millions and millions of guns. Look out, the government is going to come for you. Government thugs are going to come for you. Government jackbooted thugs, in fact, are going to come for you. I mean, but where are they? Oh, if the government's going after liberals, then that's fine. You guys on the right who are concerned about police power, I mean, police power is pretty awesome power. Only the police, only the government basically has the power to take away your freedom, to put you in prison, or to take away your life, to execute you legally. If I try to confine you, that's called kidnapping. If I try to kill you, or if I do kill you, that's called murder. But when the government does it, under color of law, it is considered, you know, legal jailing and lawful execution. And we should be concerned about that. So how has this played out in the past? Well, you know, I've shared this with you before, but it seems at least once a year we need to revisit Milton Mayer. In the late 1940s, early 1950s, somewhere in that time period, I'm not sure of the year, Milton Mayer, who was a reporter for, as I recall, the Chicago Sun, one of the big Chicago newspapers, went to Germany after World War II as the country was rebuilding and spent a year there and met with and got to know and hung out with and extensively interviewed 10 Germans who had not been in the army, they had not fought in the war, they had not joined the Nazi party, they had all managed to just basically keep their jobs and keep working through the war. And his question to each one of them was, what the hell happened here? He published this book, it's called They Thought They Were Free, it's still in print. Milton Mayer's long gone, he's passed away years ago. But what these Germans told him is worth revisiting. He was talking with a bricklayer. This guy said, this separation of government from the people, this widening of the gap, took place so gradually and so insensibly, each step disguised, perhaps not even intentionally, as a temporary emergency measure or associated with true patriotic allegiance or with real social purposes. And all these crises and reforms, and there were real reforms too, so occupied the people that they did not see the slow motion underneath of the whole process of government growing remoter and remoter. To live in this process is absolutely not to be able to notice it. Please try to believe me, unless one has a much greater degree of political awareness, acuity, than most of us ever had the occasion to develop. And by the way, go back and look at some of the things that I was writing when George W. Bush was pushing the Patriot Act and all of these this massive concentration of police power and the Department of Homeland Security, homeland being a word that has genetic roots. It's a word that was used by the Nazis. We are the homeland to the German people, which are the white people. And then George W. Bush pulls this word homeland out, which has never been used to describe America. We are not a genetic homeland. Unless you're Native American, you shouldn't be using the word homeland. But anyhow, back to Milton Mayer's book, the fellow he interviewed. He said, each step was so small, so inconsequential, so well explained, or on occasion regretted, that unless you were detached from the whole process from the beginning, unless one understood what the whole thing was in principle, what all these little measures that no patriotic German could resent must someday lead to, one no more saw it developing day to day than a farmer in his field sees the corn growing. And one day it's over his head. He talked to a college professor who continued to teach college all through everything. Pastor Niemöller spoke for the thousands and thousands of men like me when he spoke too modestly of himself and said that when the Nazis attacked the communists, he was a little uneasy. But after all, he was not a communist, so he didn't do anything. Then they attacked the socialists. He was a little more uneasy, but he wasn't a socialist, and so he didn't do anything. And then the schools, the press, the Jews, and so on. And he was always uneasier, but still he did nothing. And then they attacked the church, and he was a churchman. And he tried to do something, but then it was too late. Niemöller, by the way, his great poem, I believe, was found in a concentration camp. I may be wrong on that, but anyhow. You see, the college professor says, one doesn't see exactly where or how to move. Believe me, this is true. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for the one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join you in resisting somehow. You don't want to act or even talk alone. You don't want to go out of your way to make trouble. Why not? Well, you're not in the habit of doing it. And it's not just fear of standing alone that restrains you. It is also genuine uncertainty. Uncertainty is a very important factor. And instead of decreasing as time goes on, it grows. Outside in the streets, in the general community, everyone seems happy. One hears no protests, certainly sees none. You know, in France or Italy, there's slogans against the government painted on walls and fences. But in Germany, outside the great cities, maybe, you don't even have this. In the university community, in your own community, you speak privately to your colleagues, some of whom feel as you do, certainly. But what do they say? Oh, it's not so bad. You're seeing things. You're an alarmist. And you are an alarmist. You're saying that this must lead to that, but you can't prove it. These are the beginnings, yes, but how do you know for sure when you don't know the end? How do you know or even surmise how this will end? On the one hand, your enemies, the law, the regime, the party, they intimidate you. On the other hand, your colleagues poo-poo you as pessimistic or even neurotic. But that one great shocking occasion where tens or hundreds of thousands will join you never comes. That's the difficulty. If the last and worst act of the whole regime had come immediately after the first and smallest, thousands, millions would have been sufficiently shocked if the gassing of the Jews in 43 had come immediately after the German firm stickers in store windows, in the windows of non-Jewish shops in 1933. But of course, this isn't the way it happens. In between come all the hundreds of tiny steps, some of them imperceptible, each of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next. Step C isn't so much worse than step B. And if you didn't take a stand at B, why should you at step C? And then on to step D. And then one day, too late, your principles, if you were ever sensible of them, all rush in upon you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy. and some minor incident. In my case, it was my little boy, hardly more than a baby, saying Jews, swine, collapses it all at once. And you see that everything has changed and changed completely under your nose. The world you live in, your nation, your people is not the world you were in at all. The forms are all there, all untouched, reassuring, the houses, the shops, the cinema, but the spirit has changed. Now you live in a world of hate and fear, and the people who hate and fear do not even know it themselves.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
He ends saying, when everyone is transformed, no one is transformed, and now you live in a system which rules without responsibility even to God. Tom Hartman here with you. Wanted to dig into some of the things that are going on with regard to COVID right now. In Los Angeles, 15 kids are sick with this MISC, M-I-S-C-C. This is the inflammatory syndrome that's associated with COVID. There are 2,216 people in the hospital. This is as of July 20th, AFP, but the last dates that they have are the 15th. And at that point, 26% were in ICUs, 19% are on ventilators. Of course, when they put you on a ventilator, they render you unconscious. They put you in a coma, and then they stick a tube down your throat into your lungs to breathe for you. One in five people that goes into the hospital right now in Los Angeles has been intubated. This from Barbara Farrar, the county's health public health director, Los Angeles County. Right now, young adults are being hospitalized at a rate not seen before. No matter how young you are vulnerable to this virus. More than half of the cases reported on Sunday, this was last Sunday, concerned people less than 41 years old. And then 15 of these children now are sick with MIS-C, which is a condition where different body parts can become inflamed, including the heart, lungs, kidneys, brain, skin, eyes, or gastrointestinal organs. So far, there have been 6 deaths related to the syndrome nationwide, according to health officials. So at the same time, Congress is trying to pass money for expanded testing so fewer children will get sick. And local communities and teachers unions, the teachers union down in Florida has just sued, said we don't want to go back to work under these conditions. Trump and Trump Republicans are pushing hard to get kids back into schools and encouraging people not to wear face masks. And I think this is part of the maximum chaos strategy. This is Donald Trump creating his Reichstag fire. This is what kicked off Adolf Hitler, was when Marius van der Lubbe, this 20-year-old Dutch communist, most biographies indicate was either profoundly mentally retarded or mentally ill, was smuggled through the underground connection into the Reichstag, into the parliament building, was smuggled from one of the congressional offices of one of the Nazi party members into the Reichstag building. And in that building, they had this long hallway, which was filled with these old tapestries dating back to the 1500s. And he just went through and lit them on fire, and the building went up. And Adolf Hitler runs over to, they set up a microphone in front of the building, and Hitler is standing, and he wanted to become chancellor. He was having lunch with von Papen when this happened. And he went over and he got on that microphone and said to a nationwide audience, this is a sign from God, and we need to bring law and order to Germany. Juan Cole, professor of history at the University of Michigan, writes, Trump's reelection strategy is to scare the white suburbs, which polls show are souring on him. And it now appears clear that part of that strategy is to send federal agents dressed like Iraq war troops. I mean, why are these guys wearing camouflage? That's desert camo, right? There's desert camo, there's jungle camo. I mean, you've got different kinds of camouflage depending on the environment you're in. Portland, Oregon is not a desert. Back to Juan Cole. It appears the part of Trump's reelection strategy is to send federal agents dressed like Iraq war troops to Democratic-run cities on the pretext of protecting federal property, and then to attack and provoke Black Lives Matter and defund the police protesters, causing violence to escalate and using it to scare the suburbs. He says the exercise has the advantage for Trump of entrenching a new form of secret police and of turning federal agents into instruments of his authoritarianism. Meanwhile, a law firm in Wisconsin has an offer for teachers in Wisconsin. We will write your wills for free if you're going to go back and teach. Right? We blew it on testing. Trump turned testing. He gave millions and millions of dollars in grants to Quest, and there's one other company. Name of it is escaping me at the moment, but I got a story about Quest here in front of me. There were two testing companies he gave millions of dollars to, and they came up with a coronavirus test. Well, these are still largely centralized, and these tests are largely being done by these for-profit companies. And now Quest Diagnostics is saying 7 or more days for testing. No money earmarked for our schools. We've got a massive surge of hospitalization. 24% of hospital beds in Arizona are coronavirus cases now. In Texas, it's 1 in 5. And here in Oregon, this from Amy Green in the Oregonian, our local newspaper owned by a New York company. It's taken up to 14 days for Oregonians to learn if they've contracted the novel coronavirus, according to the Oregon Health Authority. By then, they might have already infected untold others. It's rendering contact tracing ineffective. Dr. Jennifer Vines, the health officer for Multnomah County, that's Portland, said, "This, of course, makes our ability to keep up with the virus very difficult." Yeah, you think? And it's because demand for testing is soaring in the red states, in Florida, in Arizona, in Texas, and in California as well, where they've got crisis. And we're having to use these national testing agencies because this is what the federal government set up for us. This is an absolute screaming mess. And now Trump wants to bring federalized police dressed like Iraq war soldiers into cities where he is going to try to provoke clashes with Black Lives Matter and defund the police folks explicitly, specifically. I just got an email from Trump. "Portland has been out of control, and anarchists have been running the city, and, you know, quack, quack, quack. We had to step in because violence is up and murders are up." Well, yeah, violence is up and murders are up. By the way, they're not higher than they were 10 years ago, but they're up from last year. They were actually 4 months ago radically down. At any point in history in the United States, and you could probably see the same thing in any country around the world, but I'm familiar with our history on this count, that when unemployment goes up significantly, crime goes up. People have to feed themselves. We don't have a good social safety net in this country. A lot of people don't have access to decent housing. They don't have access to food. They don't have access to the core stuff that gives you some sense of dignity in life. And on top of that, you've got people who have been locked down with this coronavirus for months now. You know, many people since March. And they're starting to snap at their spouses, and they're starting to get angry with their neighbors, and they're starting to get pissed off with the world. And that's entirely understandable. And incidents that might have been a shout are now a fight, and incidents that might have been a fight are now a shooting, and incidents that might have been a shooting are now a murder. Surprise, surprise. But the answer to all of that is not to send in the Gestapo. Stormtroopers don't solve problems. They're creating problems. This is just a naked attempt. I mean, it's not the protesters. Trump, the email I got today from the White House was explicitly blaming protesters for violence in our cities. And Trump now saying he's going to solve that violence. And protesters, of course, is code in Trump speak to white suburban voters, code for those black people protesting the murder of that black man, George Floyd. That's what they're talking about. And the simple fact of the matter is that the protesters and the protests have nothing to do with the rise in violent crime. Mark Sumner writing over the Daily Kos today. Parts of the intelligence community meant to deal with terrorism have been turned inward, not against the proven violent threat posed by white nationalist organizations, but against protesters involved in a reaction to the police murder of George Floyd and the push to remove Confederate monuments. Trump created a new police force specifically to protect monuments. That may well be who's here in Portland. And so now, because they are a standalone police force within DHS, And they have the mission to protect monuments. They are spying on anybody who might not like monuments, which means basically all the Black Lives Matter groups and anybody who's protesting pretty much anything. Turning this country into a police state is not going to make things better. And by the way, this is the Republican Trump administration. There's so much focus on Donald Trump himself. This is not just Donald Trump. You've got an entire administration that has gone fully fascist now, and you've got an entire Republican Party supportive of it, or at least not resisting it. John Kasich has come out and said enough, but, you know, he's a washed-up Republican politician who hates unions. I don't think that the Democrats are going to embrace him, even if he does speak at the DNC. The whole thing is a mess. And the authoritarian part of the Republican Party is showing up right here in Portland. Portland is a test, but it's only a test. Trump signaled this election strategy a few days ago when he talked about ending legislation that was passed back in the 60s to support fair housing. When he said that that legislation, which he is suspending, had, quote, sent people, end quote, into, quote, the suburbs, end quote. You know, essentially what he's saying is, white people in the suburbs, I'm doing what I can to keep your neighborhoods white. You have to be very afraid of these Black and Hispanic people the Democrats should be able to live anywhere in the country. How dare they? That's essentially the message that Donald Trump and Roger Stone and the Republican Party are sending you. I mean, Portland is an overwhelmingly white city. So, you know, he figured he could test out his secret police, his stormtrooper strategy here, without anybody much noticing, you know, because it wouldn't be so racialized. But now he's taking it to Chicago, a city with a far more diverse population. And if he's successful, he'll provoke a made-for-television appearance with white stormtroopers battling Black residents. And that's exactly what Donald Trump is hoping for. The most recent polls show that white people, particularly suburban white people, who were half of all voters, not exclusively white, but half of all voters in 2016, in the last presidential election, were suburban. Half. A very large portion, disproportionately large portion of those suburban voters. You know, I think it's 73% of American voters are white. Whites in the suburbs, much higher than that. And they support Trump. White people still, according to the most recent polls, majority of white people support Trump, particularly white men. And he's trying to get them cranked up enough that every single last one is going to show up to vote for him. This is a base mobilization strategy. It looks to me like Richard Nixon's Southern strategy in 1968, where the police provoked a riot at the Democratic National Convention, and, you know, it just got going. Well, of course, you had a bunch of terrible things happening in 68, peak of that being the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., which led to cities burning. And that's what got Nixon elected. At least that's what Roger Stone thought got Nixon elected. And I think, you know, Roger Stone is still advising Donald Trump. He's known him for all these years. The strategy is really simple. Provoke violence, make cities burn, and then promise to keep white people safe with law and order. This should not be a secret. But Trump has cranked this way out of the Trump administration. Now, you know, Chad Wolf, the acting director of Department of Homeland Security, and Bill Barr in the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, this is what authoritarians do. To seize political power, they tear us apart. And now, in anticipation of this election in just a few months, Trump is trying to destroy our ability to vote by mail. He knows that the polling shows, although this may be changing now that coronavirus is popping up in red states, but as of a month ago, the polling showed the Democrats were far less likely, far less willing to show up in person at a polling place to vote than were Republicans. Republicans didn't think coronavirus was that big a deal. Democrats knew it was. So he's trying to make it harder to vote by mail because that would be mostly Democrats as of a month or so ago. He's trying to explode the pandemic by forcing our kids back into school so they can come home and infect mom and dad. He's fighting funding for testing because I think he's pursuing a maximum chaos strategy. If he can have the maximum level of screaming chaos in November, and by the way, with all the mail-in votes, it's going to be several days after the election before we know who won. And during that time, Donald Trump is going to be claiming that he won. That was the strategy that the Bush campaign used in 2000 when Bush's cousin on Fox News announced that Bush had won the election, when in fact, that, you know, that was not the case. Al Gore actually got more votes in Florida, and if the Supreme Court hadn't intervened, Al Gore would be president right now. And then on top of that, Trump is sending his secret police, his stormtroopers, into our cities. They're coming to a city near you. And history shows that the most effective response is nonviolent. Here in Portland, we had 300 moms, a middle-aged Navy veteran, and a stripper. Right, John Lewis taught us about nonviolence. Martin Luther King taught us about nonviolence. Jesus taught us about nonviolence. Get ready. Coming to a town near you. Tom in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Yeah, well, first, I want to say that someone needs to leak the unredacted Mueller report right away, okay?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, the main point is those guys who showed up on the streets of Portland, okay, they showed up in D.C. first, correct?
We think so, yes.
Yeah, so now they're in Portland, and he's threatening to send them to Chicago and places like that. Do you think these might be the guys who protect Trump if he refuses to leave the White House?
Yes, absolutely. That's why, you know, when I was mentioning the SS and the SA, it was not just a random reference. The SA was originally the volunteers who policed the beer halls when Hitler would give speeches in the 20s. And they started all wearing brown shirts as kind of a uniform, the way that these guys are wearing Hawaiian shirts now. And then Hitler brought them in and gave them training and gave them authority. Hitler's personal guard was the SS. And the SS then became the Death's Head Squad, the Totenkopf Squad, and they just terrorized all of Germany. That was the federal police. And yeah, I think that this is all one thing, Tom. I think that these guys, not literally all one thing like one agency, but what you're seeing is Trump creating a force around himself that he may well call on if he loses the election and says, oh, there was voter fraud, I actually didn't lose. And then there's going to be a big test of loyalty inside the federal government. Tom, thank you for the call. But yeah, we need to be calling this what it is. This is the beginning of a coup. This is the overturning of the norms of America. This is the destruction of a democratic republic right in front of our eyes. On the line with us is Ken Klippenstein. He's the D.C. correspondent for The Nation magazine, thenation.com. Twitter handle Ken, at Ken Klippenstein, K-L-I-P-P-E-N-S-T-E-I-N. And Ken has a piece out for The Nation titled Border Patrol Responsible for Portland Arrest. Ken, who are these people who are showing up here in Portland?
So this is a variety of federal agents. Some of them are what's called BORTAC. It stands for Border Patrol's Tactical Unit. This is their equivalent of the SWAT teams. It's sort of like a kind of like special forces for Border Patrol. So those are some of the folks that have been conducting the arrests. And then also there are federal agents with the U.S. Marshals Service. So needless to say, this is a very high sort of sophisticated level of federal law enforcement to be bringing against the mayor of Portland, and many others in the state are saying something that can be handled by local law enforcement.
Have they actually arrested anybody? I know that they've kidnapped a few people, but they let them go, you know, after intimidating them. If there was an arrest, we would have a record, and you would presumably have the name of an arresting officer and the agency and all that kind of stuff. I have not seen any of that reported, and I live here.
That's what's so strange about it. The reporting suggests that they brought people in, and but not actually booked them, and so there were no records. In one case, an individual told reporters they asked if he would answer some questions, and he invoked his, you know, right to an attorney. And then at that point, they just said, all right, you can go. And then he left. And there was no sort of documentation to indicate, first of all, that he was there or why he was there.
Which raises an interesting question. If they were here, let's say that there actually was a crisis in Portland, that you had a bunch of anarchists or right-wingers or left-wingers or whatever. You had a bunch of people who were hell-bent for leather to damaging the city in some way and terrorizing the citizens. And the federal government, you know, with the best of intentions, sends in some federal police. They would arrest people. They would post what they were arrested for. They would say their names. They would, if this was being done to try to, quote, restore order to Portland, you know, there's a normal way that you do that. You know, you identify the people who are behaving like criminals, and you jail them, and you charge them with crimes, and you do it all out in the open. And none of that is going on, which causes me to think that the agenda here is not to restore order to Portland. In fact, if anything, it's to inflame Portland, number one. And number two, the end of the day has nothing to do with either order or Portland. I'm concerned, and Ken, walk me off this ledge here, or talk me off this ledge, excuse me, you know, that we saw in Michigan where the governor of the state did not like the way that Detroit and Flint, and I believe Benton Harbor, were being run, majority black cities were being run by Democratic mayors and city councils. And so he just got rid of them and replaced them with these so-called emergency managers. You know, they privatized Flint's water, blah, 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 blah. And it got litigated and, you know, they could do that. So what happens if, say, Brian Kemp decides to take out Keisha Lance Bottoms, the mayor of Atlanta? What happens if Greg Abbott decides that he's going to take out the mayors of Houston, San Antonio, and Dallas? What happens if Ron DeSantis decides that, you know, it's time to shut down Miami? And any, you know, so that basically all the blue cities in the country suddenly are under federal control. And then the election comes and that federal control really tightens down and it gets really, really hard to show up and vote, for example. Or am I just like way out of here in paranoid land?
No, I think that's exactly what the debate should be around right now. The legal justification for this is unclear. The documents leaked to me from individuals within Department of Homeland Security shows that it seems they're deriving at least some authority from the president's executive order about protecting monuments. In response to that, Department of Homeland Security created what's called, they created a task force called the Protect American Communities Task Force, or PACT for short, if that's creepy enough. And so in response to that, they're sending these federal agents to places where people are, where the authorities there are saying, we don't need this. You know, we don't need this assistance. And folks that I talk to, current and former DHS officials, are saying that when you have people running around in unmarked vehicles not identifying themselves, as you said, that can inflame the situation because people, first of all, don't know what is going on. And in addition to that, when police are clearly marked, that can have a deterrent effect against the kinds of crime that the president alleges is the reason for this, property destruction and that kind of thing. So it's really unclear why it's happening. And documents shown to me from folks within DHS suggest that this is open-ended. There's no deadline. There's when they're given talking points about how to interface with the media and answer questions. And they are told to, you know, what is the timeline for this? And also, where are these people being deployed? They basically have to indicate, we don't know. Not that we don't know, but that we're not going to tell you. Because you can't know, because they say that would harm the operational security of these missions.
Right. We also have this ICE offering the Citizens Academy course. I first read about this in Newsweek. They are training civilians in, quote, defensive tactics, firearms, familiarization, and targeted arrests. That this is, quote, an extension of the community relations work ICE is already doing in the community. This is according to ICE spokesperson Nicole Albarico speaking to Newsweek. And then I've got an ICE press release in my hand here at ICE.gov saying that the St. Paul Office of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, graduated its first inaugural class of Citizens Academy students this fall. This was several months ago. This was 9 months ago. HSI's Citizens Academy is an important tool, they say. Overall, St. Paul's HSI workforce represents about 1% of the agency, but they've obtained twice as many indictments and convictions as the national average. Also included in the Academy program was narcotics enforcement investigation. And this group of volunteers, citizens, in Portland made 100 arrests for various drug-related offenses. I'm, again, reading this from an ICE press release. And during the final phase of the Citizens Academy, the class engaged in shoot-no-shoot scenarios and a shooting range as the students experienced split-second life and death decisions firsthand. Do we know if any of these civilians, first of all, are they recruiting from the Proud Boys and things like that, number one? And number two, do we know if any of these civilian groups that ICE has trained have shown up here in Portland?
It's not clear because, again, we don't know beyond, you know, the instances in which VORTAC and U.S. Marshals have engaged what's going on. They're not being forthcoming about this. You know, as the documents that I was given showed, they're told to cite operational security, the need to preserve the secrecy around these investigations or operations. I think that's disingenuous because at the very least, you could just give people a sense of here's why we're doing it, here's where we're doing it, and here's when we're doing it and for how long without, I think, assuming that the point of all this is to prevent kind of property destruction that the president has inveighed against. you know, but that's assuming that that's the point. I mean, this could also be something, as was described to me by DHS officials, this might be something like a photo op, because when you're arresting people and then just letting them go afterwards without booking them, that doesn't seem to have much operational significance in terms of preventing or deterring crime. Wouldn't you want to, first of all, either question them or compel?
No, but it has huge propaganda consequence.
Right, right.
Ken Klippenstein, D.C. correspondent with The Nation magazine. You can read his stuff over at The Nation. You can tweet him at Ken Klippenstein. Ken, thanks a lot for dropping by. Great talking with you.
Great to be with you.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
John in Minneapolis watching Free Speech TV. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, I think that the groundwork for this kind of process by a president has been laid by the Patriot Act. And the Patriot Act, as far as I know, it was, reauthorized. But I don't think they ever really, worked out a lot of the bugs. Like, for instance, this could happen to you if you, say, were at a conference with the FARC in Colombia, and this happened to a person here in Minneapolis. They were just representing a peace group, and they were with both FARC and Colombian people or Colombian government officials. And as a result, they were giving support to a terrorist organization by even just being there. And this had happened in like 2009 and 10, and they had raids throughout Minneapolis. They had some in Chicago. It went throughout the whole country, and it's just fallen off the radar. And I don't know whatever happened with it here. Most of these people are just ordinary activists, and they would go to their house. I don't think they even had a search warrant. They just, went in, took all their stuff, took their computer, took their, laptops and their cell phones, and,
it's like what happened in Minneapolis itself just before the RNC.
Yeah. There was another incident where provocateurs were involved, the RNC welcoming committee, one of which was a person who was paid by and contracted by the federal government to egg on the RNC to do, I believe it was more, aggressive actions like throw Molotov cocktails. And it went to court. The person was charged under, I believe it was a Patriot Act.
Yeah, this is very problematic. It's why a lot of us were yelling and screaming about the Patriot Act back during the George W. Bush years, that this was setting the country up for a fascist takeover. And sure enough, it did. Melvin in Huntsville, Texas. Hey, Melvin, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. And thanks for your patience. What's up?
I was listening to your show. I've been listening for quite a while. I love your show. When you were talking about the federal forces with the unmarked uniforms and so on and so forth, and how bad it's getting and how closer to the election, the strategy that Trump may be having is similar to some of the Hitler tactics. Okay, I'm retired from the military. I find it hard to find that the military leaders will stand by and watch all of this madness happen. Because when I joined the military, I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. I didn't pledge to protect Trump or the president. It's the Constitution that I took an oath to defend. And I would bet money that military leaders would not just stand on the sidelines and watch this chaos. They would step in and put an end to it. What's your take on it?
Well, Trump has been replacing military leaders. You know, General Milley, I'm guessing, is probably in trouble right now. He's on his, fourth Secretary of Defense right now? Who's, you know, I get it, a civilian in charge of the military. But I'm guessing, Melvin, that any resistance to Trump coming out of the military is going to mostly come from your commissioned officers. It's going to come from those who have, who are college graduates, who probably did a little deeper dive into the Constitution. A lot of the enlisted men and women probably never really studied the Constitution. We haven't taught civics in the United States since the 1980s when Bill Bennett took that out of our federal curriculum requirements. And so I'm quite concerned. I mean, I look at these guys on the streets in Portland, Oregon, and I would have thought that, you know, people who are federal officers, in this case, it appears that most of them are from Customs and Border, but still, that's DHS, that they also took an oath to uphold the Constitution, and that they would say, wait a minute, you know, police on the streets with no identification, no way of even knowing for sure that they're police, that's wrong. That's not right. And yet there they are. I'm very concerned, Melvin.
Again, the oath clearly states, protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So,
right.
In this case, I cannot see how anybody of conscience would sit on the sidelines and let it go down. I just can't see it, but maybe I'm naive, but we'll see.
Well, I hope you're right, Melvin. You're the optimist here, apparently, and I'm being, this recent thing here in Portland is making me more pessimistic, but we'll see. Melvin, thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future. George in Chicago. Hey, George, what's up?
When Putin and the Russians invaded Crimea and eastern Ukraine, they did so with troops in plain uniforms with no patches, no ID badges, no name tags, no nothing. And now we see the same thing in Portland. I just wonder if Trump called his master in the Kremlin to ask for advice before he started this abomination.
It's entirely possible. This has been done by other governments throughout history. I just don't know. It is an eerie parallel. Sharon in Greenville, South Carolina. Hey, Sharon, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Thank you so much. I watch you every day. And I want to thank your previous caller because I think he's spot on a lot of this that's going on. What you have is came out with a report from Jeffrey Cahill and another reporter, and the Young Turks did a whole series of a story on it yesterday at 2:30. And what this is you have Blackwater security in that federal building. They won't tell you who they are. They can't show proof of who they are. And they have decided they're going to set up their own private. Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Steve Bannon, Eric Prince that owns Blackwater. You also have, the guy with the Iran-Contra.
Ollie North?
Ollie North, yeah. You have all these people that have set up, and they're being backed by some very wealthy billionaires to set up their own private CIA and own private intelligence, that all this intelligence will go through their private government. They're setting up their own private government. And what they're doing is they're setting up strategic locations in this country and using federal buildings to do so because he knows his numbers are down. He knows he's going to lose. So they're setting up these strategic locations so when he does, he can not step down and have these guys step out there and start shooting people and say, oh, he had to get the riots in order in the street. You have to remember that that this mongrel dog in the White House was raised by a man that believed in dare to be great, you know, L. Ron Hubbard, dare to be great stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you say something enough and you say it long enough, it's a form of mind control. And that's why the people that follow him are in a cult. But this is dangerous.
Sharon, I agree. I'm going to have to check this out. It's been a long time since Jeremy Scahill has been on our program, but I'll ask Sean to reach out to him right now. Let's see here. Karen in Cleveland, Ohio, watching us on YouTube. Hey, Karen, what's up?
I had a suggestion for the mayors of Portland and Chicago and who else it may be to kind of take the bull by the horns. When the feds show up, just go into lockdown again, as we did at the beginning of the pandemic. Let essential workers go to work. Basically, you know, entreat the people to just stay off the streets. And if everybody, or a lot of people, stay off the streets, then the feds have nothing to do. I would hope that after a few days of that, the feds would leave.
Sadly, I don't think it'll play out that easily, Karen. I get your point. I understand your point. Trump wants a fight. Lori Lightfoot, you know, the mayor of Chicago, apparently wants a fight. Ted Wheeler here in Portland is doing a fight in the courts. But I don't think this is going to end well. I'm very concerned about it. But your point is well taken. Your point is well taken, Karen. Thank you for the call. Simon in Chicago. Hey, Simon, what's up?
Hey, hello, Tom. I'm a first-time caller, and I've been listening to your radio station for like 3 months now. And I like all the people that work on it. I mean, all the ladies and stuff like that. I was listening to to your program last week, and there was a person talking about Trump, what he's trying to do. And I figured a couple of things I want to say to you. I think what he's trying to do is build vigilante groups, you know, and they will do anything, or he, like just like you're saying, they will go through the laws and stuff like that just to make it hard for us to vote. The only way to defeat this person is on the day of the election. What he's doing, he's challenging us, and he's opening door for us, you know what I mean, all these minorities, is how is he running this country and how he's going to beat everybody, correct? That's fine.
Yeah.
But the only way to do it is to vote. That's the only weapon that we have is for us is to go vote. On that day.
That's why I think that he's planning an attack on the vote. But I agree with you, Simon.
Exactly. He's doing it by mail-in ballots and stuff like that. And you know, the only way to beat him and his shenanigans, all the Trumpies and stuff like that, is just go and vote on that day. And you got to do it any way you can. I mean, by voting, you could go by a bus, drive, walk, share a ride. I mean, on that day, on that election day, we have to stay focused for now, from now till then. And we have to stay focused on the objective.
And I'm absolutely with you, Simon. Simon, you said it very, very well. Thank you very much for adding that to the conversation. Hartmut in Kennesaw, Georgia. Hey, Hartmut, what's on your mind today?
I'm so glad that I'm getting a chance to thank you for introducing me to that book, The Thought They Were Free by Milton Mayer. It turns out, as soon as I heard about it from you, I immediately went to my favorite bookstore, found there are plenty of copies left there for people who might be interested. It's a tremendous book. It's beautifully written, and it's so erudite. But for me, I'm German myself, and my father was an engineer, a part of the rocket team with Von Braun. And when he wrote his memoirs, he commented on something that comes up in the book, which I found so surprising when I read it there, namely that the German subjects that Milton Mayer was interviewing, without a single exception, they thought of the Hitler period, and actually not the part that brought them into the war, the years beforehand, from 1933 to 39 or 40, they considered that the golden age of Germany, the golden age. And my father.
Well, in 1937, Adolf Hitler was on the cover of Time magazine. He was the man of the year, and he was literally the most popular politician in the world in 1937.
Yeah, well, he certainly was. My father, in his memoirs, this is 48 years after the end of World War II, my father still writes glowingly of how when he started college, he thought there was no chance he would ever get to work in his field because there were no jobs. And suddenly, the industrialists were coming to the university to hire them before they had even graduated. He still was talking about that. He could still, in other words, the very thought of that period of time was not in any way laced with the ugly thought of what came afterwards.
Right, it's absolutely true, Hartmut. And in fact, If you look at that period from basically 1929 to 1933, when Hitler rose to power, millions and millions of people. We had 20% unemployment here in the United States. So did Germany. The Great Depression hit the entire world, and Germany, as an industrialized power, got hit really, really badly. And of course, they were also hit badly by the Treaty of Versailles reparations that they had to pay for World War I, and that was something John Maynard Keynes accurately predicted. But the bottom line is that we had two countries, the United States and Germany, that were in the same economic crisis. We chose Franklin Roosevelt, and he put the country back together, and he built the largest middle class the world had ever seen, literally. And Hitler put Germany back together, and yes, he made the trains run, he built the Autobahn, he invented the Volkswagen and sold millions of them, brought prosperity to Germany by 1937 when he was on the cover of Time magazine, but did it all in the context of building a fascist machine. Which FDR was absolutely not doing. And
But really, in a sense, Hitler was a Keynesian. I mean, the tremendous amount of money that was spent on infrastructures got the economy going again in Germany. And I thought about that when you were talking about what can we learn from the Nazi experience in Germany. And it occurred to me that one of the things that we know is that part, that terribly important part of the Nazi experience, namely that they loved that they had a golden age, that is not going to be as anything to hold Trump in good stead with the American people. This is not going to be a golden age that we're going to remember Trump by. So I suppose if there's a silver lining here somehow, there's going to be the very opposite sentiment prevailing in the United States.
Well, and this is, when I was reading from They Thought They Were Free, Hartmut, I was, he was talking about how all these gradual steps, these thousands of gradual steps until finally you're like way outside anything normal. And that, for me, was the Bush administration, frankly. The creation of the Department of Homeland Security and even the word homeland, the consolidation of police powers, the massive consolidation of power within the executive branch, creating a massive spying apparatus that could be directed against American civilians. That, we sleepwalked through the Bush years, and that laid the foundation for the Trump years. And it's a real tragedy that more couldn't have been done during the Obama years to reverse that. But Hartmut, it's a fascinating conversation. Thank you for calling and contributing to it. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. VK in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, VK, what's up?
Well, I would just like to encourage people to call all the representatives within their states as well as at the federal level to speak out with one voice against what's going on in Oregon and in solidarity with the elected officials in Oregon against this invasion, this incursion by Trump's goons. And I'm not sure exactly how, if they'd have one giant press conference or how they do this, but I think it's really important if they all speak out together against this.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, I just got David Sirota's TMI newsletter, and he talks about how even after these folks were first sent into Oregon, that a few days later that the House Democrats were advancing the appropriation.
Reauthorized it.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's, and anyway, it's a really good newsletter if anybody wants to access it. It says, "Them sternly worded letters won't stop fascism." And right. So anyway, those are my two suggestions.
And good ones, Nancy. Thank you very much for the call. And spot on. And David does point that out this morning. And you know, it's like, you know, the Lincoln Project, these Republicans, they're standing up and taking names and kicking ass. And where are the Democrats? Yes, there's been some good Democratic messaging. But, you know, it seems like the strongest stuff is coming from Republican voters against Trump and the Lincoln Project. Don Winslow, an independent guy, a filmmaker, has done some great stuff. I've retweeted a lot of his stuff. You can find it on my timeline as well as his. You know, we need to be calling people out about this, and we need to be calling them out explicitly. And we need to be doing it quickly, because this country is sliding into fascism very, very rapidly. In fact, I think that Trump thinks that that's the only way he can retain power. This is insane. It's absolutely nuts. Bill in Santa Maria, California. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, I just want to say I worked for a police department as a civilian for 14 years. So I know a little bit about the police. They are 85% pro-Trump, okay? And the other 15% is under tremendous pressure to go along with that attitude. So Trump is probably going to lose the election, but he's going to claim voter fraud, as he said. And they've asked him recently, are you going to leave office? He says, well, we'll see. We'll see. What he means is if I lose, it depends on what happens with the election. Well, I think he's going to lose, and he's going to come out and say voter fraud. And he's probably got a lot of backup guys coming out to claim they found it, Republicans in various districts. Yeah, we found voter fraud. And then, you know, there's going to be a hell of a lot of people go right to the street, and you'll have this huge police force of police departments, county sheriffs, all the people that will line up behind him to put down any kind of demonstrations. So it is looking very scary. When I heard this stuff going down, you know, I thought, uh-oh, this looks like it. And you're right. Yeah. You know, this, your ideas on fascism and so on, you're right on the money, Tom.
What if the deployment of federal troops to Portland right now is not just an experiment to find out if they can inflame a situation to the point where it might provide them with some talking points for an election, law and order talking points. The biggest problem, I suppose, that Trump has right now here in Portland is that the vast majority of people who are showing up and protesting are white. If he pulls this off in a city that is majority black, he's going to have a different profile, and that's the video that Fox News wants. But let's say that that's not even their main goal. What if their main goal is between now and January, when the transition is supposed to happen, January 20th, between now and January, they want to have an excuse to deploy federalized officers who are loyal to Donald Trump, not loyal to the Constitution, not loyal to the United States, but loyal to Donald Trump, thus drawing heavily from the Customs and Border Patrol folks, you know, the ICE folks, because they all, you know, they're all gung-ho racists and they all love Trump and what he's all about. To deploy those people into every major city in America where there's a large Democratic electorate and therefore a large group of Democrats who will be out in the streets protesting to put down those protests. What if this is preparation for the lockdown that could happen in January?
You said it more eloquently than I did, but we're saying the same thing.
Oh, that was your point?
They're preparing. And I think, I don't know how you feel, but I think he's going to lose. And he's going to claim voter fraud. He's going to have a lot of Republicans in offices saying, yeah, we found voter fraud in our district. And, you know, here's the evidence, and nobody's got time to check it. So you're right on the money. What can we do about it?
Well, we can raise hell. We can raise consciousness. We can get people ready. We can prepare people for it so they're not surprised by it, so that they can react appropriately to it. And, you know, to the extent possible, we can put, you know, at the state level in particular, put systems into place to deal with it. But it's going to be really tough in red states. Bill, thank you for the call. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark, what's up?
I think the Democrats ought to tell Mr. Trump that he shouldn't be worried about the protesters. He should be worried about these Republican governors whose policies are killing us, killing Americans. I think the Democrats need to push back on that and say, look, you better look at these states. These people are dying in Texas. These are Republican governors that are doing this. We need to stop this diversion and put the finger where it belongs. These guys are killing us.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mark. Well said. Thank you. Marilyn in Southampton, New York. Hey, Marilyn, what's up?
Touching on the issue in Portland, and I want to know if you can help me connect a dot here. Back in 2011, Obama signed the NDAA into law. It had a statute containing a sweeping, worldwide, indefinite detention provision. And I know Obama had serious reservations about the provision at the time, and the ACLU at the time said it was a blight on his legacy. It could be used to detain people indefinitely, and I kind of feel like this is the power that we just gave Trump to use in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you're right, and they haven't started.
I mean, why isn't
they haven't started to use it yet,
that?
Marilyn? But they're arresting people. They're not detaining them indefinitely, but they are detaining them. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if they're referencing that Defense Authorization Act. What we have been saying since the original Patriot Act is that when you amplify police powers in order to, quote, keep people safe, in this case from Muslim terrorists, you are amplifying police powers. I mean, you just have to understand that. And there's a huge potential for abuse associated with that. And we are now seeing that abuse in the hands of this tin pot dictator. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It does require all of us to participate. Check your voter registration. Make sure you're signed up. Make sure that you're going to get a mail-in ballot if that's what you need or what you can do in your state. Tell your friends. Make sure that they're registered to vote. This is huge. This is the fate and future of our country, maybe the world. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon. Be good to yourself and the people around you.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.